We're talking to the mayoral candidates this week, and Jeremy Alexander has been the third ward councilman. What I'm going to say, I'm going to guess 4 years. I was going to say six, but maybe it seems like six.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you. I really appreciate being able to come into the studio today. Actually, it was nice to be able to come in and see all that you have here.
Yeah, it's good to get people back here because it was almost a year. We had nobody here.
Right. Oh, so. I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So why are you running, and what are you going to bring to the big chair?
Well, you know, I've gone through the happy accident that led me onto this ballot, but here I am in the race for mayor for the second time. And honestly, it's just looking back at what I've seen in the last 4 years. You know, the council, when it works together, we're able to do a lot of good work. We're able to do some productive things. And some of the discussions that you can have with seven people representing 25,000 people, it's really amazing. But then I've also seen a lot of the issues that can easily divide us. You know, when one person's trying to rush through an ordinance or taking in a presumed point of view, and I see those issues slowing us down. So if I'm a mayor, I want to make sure that we're an effective council, and I think that what that takes is a mayor that's really in service to the council members, so that way it's allowing those council members to be in service to all the people that they represent, and to make sure that as mayor, holding that gavel, that we're listening to every single voice, every single person that's got an issue, every person that's like, hey, yeah, we're going to pass that ordinance, but have you thought about this? I want to be the guy that takes 5 minutes for anybody and says, yeah, tell me your point of view. You know, tell me what we need to think about.
So what, slow it down?
Slow it down a little bit. Make sure that we're actually putting out good ordinances. We've got one that we're working on right now, this urban farming ordinance.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a good idea. There's some good parts to it, but, you know, I know I've got a lot of questions. You know, essentially, I'm a city guy. I've lived here for the last 25, 30 years, you know, and they're asking me about pigs and chickens and bees. Well, we need to do some research on this. We need to make sure that this ordinance is written in a way that is easy to understand, easy to interpret. So if somebody does want to do one of these things, they know they're following the rules as well for their neighbors. Hey, if one of your neighbors is doing one of these things, well, at least they're following the rules. But we're the ones that make those rules. We got to make sure that they're easy to read, they're clear, and they strike the good balance, especially on an issue like this. You know, what is where's the difference between your personal property rights? What can you do on your property versus how is that affecting your neighbor and his property?
Yeah, since you brought that up, let's get into that just a little bit. You take an issue like that, you're going to have everybody, it's going to run the gamut, isn't it? You're going to have good and bad.
Well, there's definitely a wide area of people that have given an opinion to this on me.
Yeah, this guy's going to like it, and his neighbor's not.
Exactly. And that's where it comes to having good limits and having a well-designed ordinance. Say with the bees thing, okay, well, if there's going to be bees here, you've got to have a hive this many feet from your property line. It's got to be this tall up. There's essentially a flight path that the bees take out of their hives, and you want to make sure that that flight path isn't going directly through your neighbor's enjoyment.
Yeah.
But, you know, having signs posted, you know, making sure that people are aware. Having the neighborhood, the clause in there saying that you'd actually need your neighbor's permission, every neighbor within 100 feet, you know, if you have chickens or something like that. So, again, it's having an ordinance like this, having a good discussion, and then sitting back and listening. You know, I know I've had a ton of phone calls, people, some laughing at us for even bringing up the idea, and other people saying, well, gosh, you know, I moved to Jackson because we do things like this. So, it's just listening. Taking all those opinions and making sure that we write a quality product, which for council is that ordinance that we produce. I want to make sure we're putting out a quality work product as well.
What do you feel are the key assets of being a mayor when you look at, obviously a mayor is, you got to do some compromising.
Right. Well, it's compromising, but it's listening. It's realizing that, you know, this isn't a win-lose situation on any ordinance that we can discuss. It's not if you're going to come out ahead and your neighbor's the loser, but how are we working together? We want to make sure that we have policies that are lifting up our entire neighborhoods, every single person. And that's where the key of listening comes through and understanding when somebody's got a problem with an ordinance, you don't just say, oh, well, they're against it. No, why are you against it? You know, what exactly of this ordinance don't you like? You know, is it, and a lot of times when you start asking these questions, all of a sudden it's like, well, actually, it's the way that the second sentence and the third paragraph's phrased. I'm afraid it means this. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, how about we just fix that? And now you have somebody that's not against the ordinance. They were just against that little sentence, and you can fix those little problems. And all of a sudden you can come together with an ordinance that you actually do have wide support on, 70, 80, 90% of people supporting. Of course, you can never make everybody happy, but I do believe it's our job as council members to try to make the most people happy as we can when we're passing these ordinances.
Jeremy Alexander with us. Now, Jeremy, you ran before. Yeah. You know, any difference this time? Or
a little bit of difference. I think the run 2 years ago is probably helping me right now, just a little bit of name recognition. I know 2 years ago, especially as I got out into, you know, the second ward, the fifth ward, the sixth ward, there were some of those wards that just really didn't know me at all. You know, of course, I just represent the third ward. So in 2017, I just walked my own ward and got to know them really well. So in 2019, trying to get to know the rest of the city. And now this time, it's feeling pretty nice. A lot of people already know me, already remember me. And if anything, they, from meeting me 2 years ago, I think it perked their ears anytime they saw something going on. And so now people have just kind of, they know who I am and they kind of know what I stand for. And it's been really nice just to get to know a lot more people in the city.
What's the biggest issue you're hearing from constituents?
The biggest thing is gunshots. Yeah. You know,
crime.
Crime in general, but gunshots, because that's just one of those things that it might be an issue down the street that is affecting you. And again, you know, those personal property rights, you know, what your neighbor does affect you. And, you know, when you have a stray bullet that can go hundreds of yards, you know, quarter mile, you know, that's really tragic, and we've seen the tragedies, you know, play out over and over. And it's issues like this where you have to talk to people and listen to people, and then talking and listening, and then communicating back. And, you know, I'm a strong person to think that I want to do the best I can in the role of mayor, but I'm also not going to promise anyone that as mayor I'm going to solve gun violence. You know, gun violence is an issue that our society is facing right now, and it's not necessarily an issue that I don't feel that government can solve. It's something that we solve in our neighborhoods. It's something that we solve in our families, in our communities, in our villages. It is the people of the city of Jackson that will solve this problem, not necessarily our government.
But government has to be concern, because people are going to look to you if you're the mayor for leadership, I guess.
For leadership.
On issues like that.
Absolutely. And that's where it comes down to, is we have to look at what can I do as mayor, as being the leader of city policies. Well, city policies, we can look at what the council is doing. We've looked at the interventions, which again, prevention is a cheap way to solve anything. We've looked at the interventions and the preventions. We've looked at ShotSpotter. I hope to have a discussion on ShotSpotter again coming up. So we can look at the things that government can do, but then we have to start looking outside that box, and we have to start looking at what can we do as a society? What can we do here in the city of Jackson to strengthen our families? And again, it's raising our children as a village, you know, to make sure that we're all looking out, because these are all our own children that are firing these shots. We need to make sure that we as a community are finding a way to reach out to them in new ways.
Because leading the council, you're really in charge of the law enforcement.
Well, that's a stretch. As mayor, I am a ceremonial leader.
You're overseeing the police department, the council, certainly.
Certainly. The council oversees our four appointed persons, and then those four appointed persons with the rest. You know, to have that leadership, it's more ceremonial than anything else, but absolutely, it is an important role. And in that role, I want to make sure that I'm supporting our police officers and listening to them. What tools and techniques do they need to be more effective? What tools and techniques do we need to, when somebody does commit a crime, you know, they should be arrested and they should be punished, and to make sure that is followed up. So again, listening to our police officers, what tools and techniques do they need? What can I do to help them? what ideas are in the community of things that we haven't tried yet. Like the intervention program, when it was first pitched to me, I think it was about 3 years ago when I'd first heard about it. At first, I thought, well, that doesn't sound good at all. Why would we do that? You know, if there's somebody with a gun, we need to send an officer. Well, an intervener can be a third of the cost and can actually go in there in a way that an officer can't. You know, an officer goes in fully armed with a weapon and a badge, as they should be. Well, that's not the person that a lot of people are going to talk to. So sometimes having somebody that can has some training just to go and talk and intervene into these situations. You know, if we hear a rumor that this person's got a gun and they're trying to look for that person, well, send out somebody to have a conversation. See if we can head that off. See if we can find another solution. And
certainly a different idea, a different way to go after it.
Absolutely. And this is something we have to attack it in all the ways. You know, we've got to find every different possible solution and keep trying everything until we see what works.
But as I've heard from all the candidates, that's what they're hearing from the voters.
Absolutely.
The gun violence.
This is an important issue because it does affect everyone. It absolutely affects everyone. You know, there's other issues with crime that, you know, a lot of people want to think are victimless. You know, I don't believe in that. I think there's a victim to every crime. But if something's going on in somebody's house, you know, down the street, if it's just in their house, it doesn't affect you in your house. But with the gun violence, it does, because if there's a shootout down the street, it can absolutely affect you and your family.
What about the water, I would say, water crisis here?
Well, the water crisis, I think that's way overstating it. I think that comes down to a matter of communication. And I love listening to people, but on the other side of that, I love communicating back to people. And part of that communication back is to explain, you know, this water, as you just said, crisis isn't really. We do have the lead and copper rule here in the state of Michigan, which basically means in the state we're going to get rid of all lead, which in general is a good thing. You know, here in Jackson, it's kind of a bitter pill to swallow because we
pricey.
It's pricey. We do have a lot of lead pipes, and they are expensive to get rid of. And then secondly, because of that, we've invested over the last 40 or 50 years in an amazing water treatment plant, and we have great water here in Jackson. And as long as you have good water going through a lead pipe, that's okay, you know, as long as it's well, good treated water. Unfortunately, it's going to be really expensive. We're going to get rid of all those lead pipes. We have been able to work that out over 35 years. And even then with the costs, looking at, we have had some cost increase. We just had a 12%, and it's going to be over the next 2 years. But when we look at that cost, the average family before was spending about $35 to $40 per month on their water bill. Now add those increases, and now they're going to be spending between $40 and $45 a month on that water bill. Now, again, I hate to see any bill go up, but if there's going to be a bill with an increase, it's a good thing. It's the smallest bill to start with. And when we look at the value received, you know, for the cost out, what are we receiving? Good, clean, safe drinking water. And I definitely believe that a good, safe, clean drinking water is something that needs to be protected, not just in Jackson, but in Michigan, but throughout our world.
So you're a thumbs up for the increase?
For the increase, yeah, I definitely voted for it. You know, the LCR, that's a state rule that came in. We have to comply with it. And at that point, as a matter of council member, it's looking at, well, these are the costs of the water program. This is what we have to make sure that water fund stays whole.
So going along with the lead pipe replacement is the street repair, and I guess those go hand in hand.
Well, and that's where we're actually going to get the benefit from this. So now that we have to replace some of these lead pipes, while we're digging up that road to replace the lead pipe, and we can do that with the water funds because we're replacing the water pipe, now we can go ahead and dovetail that with our roads program so we actually get some of those cost benefits. Now the road was removed using the water funds, and now we can use less street funds to replace that road.
Are you satisfied with the breakdown of this $31 million that we're allegedly receiving from Uncle Sam?
We definitely received, and as far as the breakdown, I think it's a little broad and a little vague to say, well, 30% here and 40% there.
Yeah.
You know, as part of a vague plan, I'm okay with it. You know, generally speaking, we do want to cover all those bases. But what's going to come down to this is what we already saw is it's going to be spending items one at a time. So even at our last council meeting on the 13th, I think we had half a dozen, maybe seven or eight different items that took their funding from that, from those stimulus funds.
So I don't know. Do you have a different breakdown or
not really
any area that you would look at?
When we're looking at that $31 million, it's the same way I look at that as the same way you could say the stimulus that I received with my own family. You know, I'm not going to spend that money on anything that we wouldn't have otherwise spent money on. It's not like all of a sudden we have extra money and so we can spend it on something that we didn't need before. The city of Jackson has the same structures, the same uses. So the biggest thing is looking at our water plant. The water plant, both treatment for water out and water in, both of those plants have seen some disrepair over the last, I'd say, 10, 15, 20 years, and we have to make sure we keep up on that. And just to make sure that we continue to have a clean, efficient system for our water. And so to invest some of those funds in projects that have been waiting for funding, those are good, safe choices to make.
Current administration heavily into affordable housing.
Yes.
Are you on that bandwagon? Or because we hear some people say, why is the city in the housing business?
Well, we're quite literally, I think we're trying to get out of the housing business. We definitely want more affordable housing. Housing is one of the biggest costs. You know, you talk about water that's, you know, $20 or $30 a month versus housing, which is going to cost a family or a person anywhere from $600 to, you know, $8,000 a month. You know, that's the important cost that we have to look at. And previously, the city of Jackson was almost kind of hoarding a few houses. Anytime we could hold back some houses on some tax auctions, they'd be saved as strategic properties, and who knows what we'd want to do in the future. But right now, the city administration, and definitely with my support as well, is selling off these homes. We'd much rather have these homes in the hands of our constituents, and especially when some of these are some affordable homes. When we get something on the tax auction from the county, it might be in disrepair. It might be $5,000-$10,000, but they can be cheap. They can be easy for a person to go ahead and flip and get themselves into that home. And so those are definitely options that we're trying to get back out to our constituents. And I think that'll be the process going forward when we see these tax auctions come from the county to immediately get them out for sale to the city residents.
What about these bigger projects like the new tribes that project?
So the new tribes, there's a lot of good ideas that I've heard with that project. The idea of offering wraparound services is good. I think when we're looking at our homeless populations, we can't just look at the lack of a home as the only problem. There might be employment issues. There might be mental health issues. There might be substance use issues. There can be all kinds of issues. So the idea of having wraparound services, I love that, and I love the work that the United Way is trying to do. As far as if the United Way is trying to come and ask the city of Jackson to buy them a building, no, I don't think that's a good idea. I think historically we can look at the investments that the city council has made in buying big buildings over the years, and historically we just don't do very good at it, to be perfectly honest. And that's looking at the last 25 years of council, and that is very definitely looking at my last 4 years on council. I'm not buying a big building. If the United Way would like to ask the city of Jackson to buy them a building, then I think they need to knock on the doors of about 20,000 doors, and they need to collect about a $50 check from each one of those 20,000 doors, and there's their building. If they have the support of the people of Jackson, well, go buy your building. But if you're trying to shortcut the people and come ask seven people on council to give you a couple million, it's not going to work when I'm there.
MLK corridor, are you thumbs up on that, or is that long overdue?
Long overdue there. The MLK corridor, one, all our corridors in Jackson we want to improve. I really like the tax increment financing that we did on that corridor. And so what that does is it lets the community know that their investments will also be preserved in the corridor. So when we've got business owners that are so near and dear to that area, and they're investing in that area, as they increase the taxable value in that area, those increases in taxes must stay in the area. And I think that's absolutely essential, because there's so much pride in that area all along the MLK border that we've got a lot of business people that are looking to open there, and we want to make sure that when they know they're investing in that area, that the profits, not just the profits that they have and that they share with their employees, stay in the area, but also the taxes are going to stay in the area. So having that tax incremented financing plan there, I think, was a really good idea and absolutely has my support.
Why should people vote for you, Jeremy?
You know, because I'm something a little bit different. You know, when we look at politics, and again, over the last 20 years in the city of Jackson, or, you know, state, local, over the last couple years, politics has gotten tough. There's a lot of division. There's a lot of angry people out there. You know, everyone's trying to point out who's better than who and who's got the good idea and who's the smart one and who's the, you know, I like to be happy. I like to be a little joyful. I like to apply myself. I like to learn what goes on with these issues and find out the right thing to do. You know, I don't sit up here thinking I'm right or I'm left or I'm supposed to this or I'm supposed to this. I'm just a guy from Jackson. I've lived here pretty much my whole life. I love the city. You know, working in IT, I've always been a diagnostician. You know, I like to figure things out and solve problems. And so now that I'm here in council, I've tried to use those same mentalities that I have in the rest of my life and apply myself here. And we've seen moral issues come up, and I've had to call out people on the right. I've had to call out people on the left. You know, I like to be the guy that walks a straight, thin path myself. And I think what the city of Jackson really needs right now is a mayor that's not going to look at any of these party-type issues. You know, this isn't about right. This isn't about left. This is about just having somebody that can listen to every single person in the city of Jackson. And that's what I am. You know, I answer my phone when people call. You know, people stop down at City Hall and they try to get a meeting with the mayor and he won't show up. And so they'll be like, well, we can call Jeremy. He'll come talk to you. And they do. And I'll go downtown and meet with about anybody. You know, feel free to give me a call anytime. 517-769-4745. You know, when my phone rings, I answer it. And whether it's a constituent that's got a question or they want me to come look at the pothole in front of their house, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I believe we need. Somebody that can actually be a mayor for all of our city residents.
Hey, thanks for coming out. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
You better answer my call now.
Anytime you call.
Thanks, Jeremy.